We're going to start a new series today. We do sermon series around here and talk about things for a few weeks. And I was thinking about what the first sermon series should be here in our new building. And I thought that it was appropriate to name this one Hello. And that's what I want to do. I want to say hello to you. I want to say hello to the people who are here for the first time. I want to say hello to the not yet Christians. I want to say hello to the people who are Christian. I want to say hello to the people who are visiting today. I want to say hello to the people in our community. I want to say hello to the people who have been with us from the very beginning when we started this thing 5 years ago. And, you know, typically after you say hello, there's a little bit of explanation of who you are. You know, hello, my name is, and this is why I'm at your doorstep. You know, hello, my name is this, and here's why I'm bothering you. You know, here's a little bit of who I am, and here's why I want to talk to you. And so that's what I want to do over the next couple weeks. I want to explain exactly who we are and what we're about. And I think it's going to be beneficial. I think it's going to be beneficial for those of you who are new and here for the first time, for you to find out who exactly Anchored Hope is. But it's also going to be important for those of you who have been with us from the very beginning, because it's a reminder to us that although the place we worship might have changed, who we are doesn't change. Our DNA is still the same. Who we are matters, and I think it matters to God, and I think it matters to our future success. So we're going to jump right into this thing, and the first thing that we are Anchored Hope Church, and we are a church of faith. Now, nobody's jaws just dropped, right? Nobody said, oh, wow, that's unique, right? I mean, isn't that what most churches say, is that they're a church of faith, that they're a church that's faith-filled? Yeah, but in my opinion, it's a little bit different in maybe how we express it and just what our faith looks like. We're Anchored Hope Church, and we are a church of faith. But here's the deal. We are faith-filled, big-thinking, bet-the-farm risk-takers. That is who we are. And as a matter of fact, I want you to say that with us just so you can, you know, get it in your brain, let it marinate, all right? So here we go. We are faith-filled, big-thinking, bet-the-farm risk-takers. That is who we are. We are faith-filled. Faith is what fuels us. Faith is what gets us up in the morning. Faith is what made us buy this place. Faith is what made us start this church in the first place. Faith fuels us, and that faith fuels us so much that it makes us do crazy things. We do crazy things that are way bigger than we could ever imagine, that are things that are so outside of our comfort zone, so outside of our resources, so outside of our strength, but we believe that it is possible. When we started this church, there were 10 of us, 10 of us who met in a firehouse to talk about what this would look like. And we thought, you know what? This can happen. This could take off. This could be something that could grow. And we just had this huge imagination and these big dreams, and we were so creative. And it was all because of not what we believed we could do, but what we knew God could do and how God could succeed. And that faith in him, that belief that he would have us and that he had us here for a reason and a purpose, it fueled us and it filled us. And that leads us to some big thinking. We have some big thinkers here at Anchored Hope Church. Our faith is so big that we just think huge. When we walked into this building and we saw what it was, we thought, you know, if we had to, we could have church in here next week. It would be no big problem. But we were big thinking, and we had some imagination, and we had some dreams of what this could do. So, you know, we just thought, you know, let's just start ripping up carpet without even knowing what's underneath it, you know? And, you know, when are we going to start? Oh, we'll get this done in 12 weeks in the midst of Christmas. No problem. You know what I mean? How do we know it's going to work out? Because we have faith. You know, we don't know how it's going to work out. We don't know when it's going to work out. But we know it will work out because we have faith. And that creates so many big ideas in our heads of what we could do. You know, this last Christmas, we've partnered a lot with the school district and with Bright Futures. And we're on that board. And we sat with them, and we talked about the needs of the community. And no other church was doing anything this Christmas for the community to help families in need. And we had done something smaller before with just Main Street Elementary, where we put shoes on kids' feet. And that, you know, we were able to raise around $3,000 every year for that. And this year, the Bright Futures office and Amy Porter, she was just like, you know, there's just nobody doing anything. No adopt-a-family programs, no nothing. And we all sat there together, and I said, well, you know what? We could do something. We could do something big. You know what? We could make a Christmas shop, an affordable Christmas shop, where everybody could come through, and we wouldn't just gift them with things. We would allow them to actually shop for their own gifts. And you know what? We won't just open it up to Main Street Elementary. We'll open it up to the entire community. Every school, every counselor can be invited. And we did the math, and we had to go from raising $3,000 to about $10,000 in 8 weeks. But we just looked at the school district, and we said, it'll be fine, you know? Now, my leadership team didn't look at me and say it would be fine, right? Like, do you know we just bought a building? Hello, you know? But yeah, you know what? We had faith. And we knew that God would provide, and we knew that God would piece it together. And you know what? We even raised above and beyond what we needed for that budget. And we took care of every family. The day of the event, we were on Facebook telling people we had more gifts left over. We've got gifts saved for next year. We've got money saved up for next year. And you know why that was all possible and we were able to do that? Because we had faith. Because faith causes us to think big. And faith also makes us risk takers. Probably the biggest risk any of you ever took was 6 years ago hiring a 24-year-old with only 2 years of experience. That was a bad idea. Very risky. I mean, he had tattoos and stuff. He's very small. You know, I mean, he's got a mouth on it. You guys got to be more careful, all right? I'm just telling you. But we took a risk. We took a risk when we started this church. We took a risk in so many things we've done. We took a risk with Bonfields. We took a risk with buying this place. But you know what? That's what we do. We do not insult God with small ideas, with safe bets. We go all in. We bet the farm. We risk it all because we know what's on the line, people's lives. And we put ourselves all in and we go for it all. And we are those risk takers. And that all comes from our faith. And that's what I want to talk to you this morning. I want to ask you the question, where is your faith? Where's your faith at? Because I think it matters to God. And I think it matters for the future of our success. Where is your faith? I want you just to be really honest for a second. I want you to think about your faith. And I want you to kind of give yourself a somewhere on a scale. I want you to rate your faith, okay? I want you to go, 1 is the lowest, 10 is the highest, okay? 1 is the lowest, 10 is the highest. And I want you to rate your faith. And here's what I want you to do. I'm going to make it really, really easy for you. I want you to think about this last week of your life. Very easy to remember, right? The last week of your life, I want to ask you, what have you done that was faith-filled? What have you done that was big thinking? What have you done that was bet the farm risk taking? What did you do this week where you literally, it would not have happened unless you had God in your life? It wouldn't have happened by your own strength. You had to rely on him. You had to lean on him. You had to ask him and you had to beg him to come through for you. That's how crucial it was. What in your last week have you done that required faith? Or let's even talk about your prayer life for a minute. What was your prayer life like this last week? Did you pray faith-filled prayers? Did you pray for big stuff? Did you pray that somebody would be healed from cancer? That somebody would get out of the hospital? That somebody would make it? Did you pray for marriages to be healed? Did you pray for financial resources to show up when they didn't look like they were coming? What did you pray this week? Or did you pray for safe travels to work? God, I hope Joy FM is really good today. You know, please make it pleasing to the ears and allow me to drive with one hand and my coffee in the other, you know, and just help me get to work safely today, you know. What was your prayer life like this week? Did you pray risky prayers or did you pray safe, easy to answer? You know, probably by coincidence, it'll be okay prayers. I'll make it even more easier for you. Your prayer life, what you prayed this week, if God said, yes, 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 yep, 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 answered all your prayers exactly how you want them, what would look different in the world?
Your prayer life, what you prayed for this week, if God said yes to everything, what would be impacted? Would people just be making it to work safer? You know, would their food be blessed? Would the Taco Bell not upset their stomach as much? Or would like marriages and relationships change and people would be healed and the blind could see and the lame could walk? I mean, what would be different in the world if God had answered your prayers this week? So what do you think? Low end, high end, go ahead, rate yourself honestly in your head. If you're a 7 or above, I got nothing to say to you. Just go in the cafe, have a donut. You know, leave whenever you want to leave. You're good, you know. I'm not there, but God bless you. I'm glad you're saved and sanctified, okay? But you know what? For the rest of us, if we were honest, we're probably a little challenged. Our prayer life, if there was a prayer life at all, it probably didn't require much faith. It probably didn't lean too heavily on God. The decisions we made, the risk we took, The big ideas that we went after may not have been as faith-filled as we first thought or as we would imagine. So what do we do with that? I think our faith matters to God. And the reason I say that, the reason I believe that is because what I see in the Word. We believe around here that, you know, Jesus came for many reasons, but one of the great things that we get through Jesus is we get a better idea of who God is and what He cares about. And when I look at the Bible, I see these two stories of Jesus that have to do with faith. And I think it tells us that God cares about our faith. And that our faith isn't just important to Him, it should be important to us because it sets us up for future success, or it actually becomes kind of a roadblock of future success. So I want to share these two stories with you. The first one's found in the Gospel of Mark. And what's happening in the story is Jesus is in his hometown, right? It's your hometown crowd. That should be the easiest crowd in the world to teach to. And so he's teaching, and he's offering up healings, and he's preaching to his hometown crowd. And all of a sudden, the people, they're just ignoring him. Actually, they're offended that he's even talking to them. And they're just kind of giving it back to him. You know, who does this guy think he is? He's the son of a carpenter. He's not the son of God. He shouldn't be saying these things. And Jesus says something about their lack of faith. In Mark 6, it's going to be on the screen. It's also in your sermon notes. And because of their unbelief, he couldn't do any miracles. Jesus, he couldn't do any miracles among them except to place his hands on a few sick people and heal them. And he was amazed at their unbelief. Jesus was in his hometown crowd, people who knew him, people who probably even heard the story of who he was and where he came from. And Jesus is preaching, and what he's amazed at, what made his jaw drop to the floor, is their lack of faith and how they didn't believe he was who he said he was, and how they didn't believe and that he could do what he said he was going to do. And notice, because of their lack of faith, it put a bubble around them. It literally was like a stiff arm to God. And Jesus says he was unable. He was unable to perform the miracles that he wanted to perform. He was only able to heal a few sick people. And it was because of their lack of faith. And it just amazed Jesus. And then later on in the Gospel of Luke, we see a similar story, but it goes a little bit differently. What happens is a centurion, he comes up to Jesus, and many of the people, they wouldn't like a centurion, but he had a sick servant that was dying. And so the centurion sent someone to go to Jesus and say, "Hey, Jesus, come to this guy. Here's my servant. Come and heal him." And whenever Jesus met up with the centurion, they weren't there with the person physically who was sick. The centurion simply turned to Jesus and he said, "Jesus, here's the thing. You don't need to come travel with me. I know you're a busy man. And I know you've been going around, you've been laying your hands on people, but here's the thing. I know you don't have to do that. Here's what I believe, Jesus. I believe, Jesus, you can just speak it, you can say it, and it'll happen. And I believe right now, I have such a faith that if you just say he's healed, I will leave here without any, you know, any assurance, without knowing, but I'll know in my heart. I have faith. I know that he will be healed. I believe in you so much, all you have to do is say it." This was unprecedented. I mean, this had never happened. I mean, Jesus was touching people, and he was healing people. But this guy walks up, and he's so full of faith, and he's like, "You know what? You just need to speak it, and I believe it, and I'll leave here with no assurances, and I just know it will be taken care of. That's how much faith I have in you." And Jesus, man, he's in awe. And in Luke 7, 9, this is what he says. And then when Jesus heard this, he was amazed. Turning to the crowd that was following him, he said, I tell you, I haven't seen faith like this in Israel. Now, this guy was a completely different story. This guy, Jesus was just in awe. He was amazed. This guy, he's taking it to another level. He's willing to leave here with no assurances, with no hard evidence that his servant is actually healed, and he still believes it. That's how much faith he has. I haven't seen faith like this. Two different stories. Two different instances. And here's the question. If Jesus looked at your level of faith, would he be amazed or would he be in awe of how little it actually was? If Jesus looked at your faith, if Jesus looked at your life, would he say that it was faith-filled? Would he say that it was big thinking? Would he say that it was bet the farm risk taker? If he looked at your prayer life, would he say, man, look at these. Look at how he prays. Look at how much he believes. Look at how much he leans on me. How much he knows that I'll be there. How much he believes in his heart. How assured he is. Wow. That's my boy. That's my girl. That's my Evel Knievel faith guy right there. I mean, look at that kind of faith. Or would he look at you and be in awe with his jaw drop and go, I cannot believe that they don't believe. After everything that I've done, after all the ways I've provided, after all the times continuously where I've come through for them, and through all the stories and all the testimonies and all the people that they know, still they don't believe. Still they have anxiety. Still they have fear. Still they get so worked up and they think the end of the world. I'm just in awe. I mean, what do I have to do to prove that I am who I say I am? That I am God and that you can have faith in me and that you can believe in me. If God looked at you, honestly, seriously, what would he say? Would he be in awe of how big a faith you had? Or would he be stunned by how little of a faith you actually have? I think it matters so much to us because it matters not only to God, but here's the other thing. Think about this. Let's go back to Jesus when he was in his hometown. How what they did literally just kind of stiff-armed Jesus. And Jesus was unable to perform miracles because they had little faith. I mean, think about that. God came to earth. God hadn't been this close in forever. And God literally was standing in front of them to be with them, to perform miracles. How much more real could it get? And still they didn't believe. And they just stiff-armed him and missed that opportunity. And they just put a bubble around themselves and it said that God was unable because of their unbelief. Think about in your life the opportunities you may have missed out on. The miracles you might have missed out on. The experiences you might have missed out on because your faith was just too small. Think about for a minute the times in your life where anxiety and fear and distractions and selfishness got in the way of seeing a miracle of God and seeing his power be real and experiencing that. Think about the possible experiences you may have missed because that's exactly what happened in Jesus' hometown. And here's the thing, I don't want that to happen for you. I want you to have all of God. I want you to experience all he has for you. I want you to witness all. I want you to experience all. I want you to be able to grab hold of every single opportunity that he has planned for you, that he wants to give you your way when the devil tries to trip you up and tempt you and life kind of drags you down. I want you to know what it's like to be faith-filled, big-thinking, Beck the Farm risk takers because I'm telling you right now, it's worth it. It's worth it. And so there's three statements I want to make on faith this morning that kind of, I think, are going to help us understand what faith is and what faith looks like in our life. And the first statement is this: you cannot play it safe and please God. You cannot play it safe and please God. The author of Hebrews in 11:6, he says this. He says, and it's impossible to please God without faith. Anyone who wants to come to him must believe that God exists and that he rewards those that who sincerely seek him. Pleasing God requires some thrill seeking, okay? You can't play it safe. You can't play it safe. It requires you to go all in. It requires you to do some unsafe things. It requires you to do some thrill seeking that may make you feel uncomfortable. It requires us to do that. But here's the thing I think we all know in life. I think this is a general thing of life that we've all experienced, is that a lot of times the scariest things in life are the most rewarding things in life, right? Wouldn't you say? Some of the scariest things in life usually end up being the most exciting. I mean, those are the storytelling moments that, like, we got to go tell people and we got to go share with people, right? Darren, our lovely bassist up here, we were colleges and roommates. And I remember in the spring of college, our junior year, he said, man, I want to do something crazy fun for spring break. I want to go do something crazy fun. I said, Darren, what do two well-behaved Christian boys like us do that's crazy fun for spring break? And he said, I want to go jump out of a plane. And I said, well, okay, that's one thing we could do. Let's make a list, you know? Let's weigh our options a little bit, you know? Let's just see. Let's just chew it up, you know, just, you know, let it marinate. No, I want to go jump out of a plane. I said, okay, Darren, well, this is your thing. You go do it. So here we go. We're traveling back from Kansas City to Missouri, and we're driving on this highway. We're out in the middle of nowhere, and then all of a sudden, in the middle of this field, all of a sudden, there's just a metal shed, and we pull up to it, and I'm like, Darren, is this the place? He goes, yeah, this is the place. I go, okay, all right. So we get out, and we walk in, and the guy goes, hi, guys, how you doing? And we just, you know, hi, sir, we'd like to jump out of your well-functioning plane. We read on the intranet that this is the place to do it. Can I hand you money and pay you for this terrible life experience, please? And he said, sure, come in. And I'm looking around, and it's a shed. It's a guy's, like, garage, you know? And so he gives us this paperwork, and we start filling out this paperwork. It takes like 35, 40 minutes to fill out this paperwork. I mean, this is long and exhaustive. I will not sue you if. I'm like, man, these guys. And I'm thinking to myself, I turn it down. I'm like, we're going to be here all day. Because if the paperwork takes 40 minutes, he's going to train us for like, what, like 6 hours, you know? I mean, I better call my mom. We're not going to be home for dinner, you know? And so we go through this paperwork. We finally get it done. Big old stack of paperwork. And we're sitting on this couch, and there's a coffee table in front of us. And he goes, all right, boys, here's what I want you to do. I want you to lay on my coffee table, and I want you to do this. Now I'm thinking, where's MSNBC? Because there needs to be some hidden cameras in this place. And so we take turns. Here we go. And Darren goes first, and he does the thing on the coffee table, you know? And the guy's just standing there, and he's looking at Darren, and he goes, that'll do. Then he calls me up there, and I go up there, and he's like, go ahead, and I'm like, and he just looks at me and goes, yep, okay, you guys ready to go? Pardon? You know, is there a coffee table that you have up there in space? Like, is that what we're writing? What are we doing here? And so he does. He just takes us out to his plane. He gives us these, you know, Power Ranger jumpsuits that have holes all down the side, and we get in those, and he takes us over to his plane. It's a one-seater plane. There's one seat in it, and I'm just like, we're going to jump, and I'm turning to Darren, and I'm like, Darren, how much did you research this guy? And he goes, I know you how you like to save money. I found the cheapest guy we could find. And so then his crew comes out because we're doing the tandem thing where we're attached to somebody. One guy's come out. He's rubbing his eyes like this. And then there's this other girl, this drop-dead gorgeous girl, and I'm praying to God, God, if I'm going to die, let me die attached to a pretty woman I'm never able to marry. Just, Lord, if you're going to take me with her. That's all I ask. Darren got her. I did not. I get Dopey, you know, the sleepy elf who just woke up, and so he just runs up behind me and attaches himself to me, and I'm like, hello, take me on a date first. And then we get in the plane, and there's no seat. We're just kind of crawled together. And then what we did is there's this swinging open door, and there's just this one metal step. And he says, all right, so boys, what you're going to do is when I say go, you're going to step on that step, and you're going to go out, and you're going to do the couch thing. And I said, okay, that's it. And he said, no, I'm telling you, though, the guy attached to me, he says, now remember, you got to jump out. Don't jump up. And I said, what happens if I jump up? He goes, I'll get decapitated. And I said, okay, I'll try. And he goes, no, you better do it. Remember, I'm the only one who knows what to pull. And I said, got it. So we get in the plane, and we take off, and we get up there, and here we are. And I'm just like, I'm getting saved and sanctified. I'm asking God to forgive me for sins I haven't even committed yet.
I'm like, Lord, here I come. You know, I haven't done any of these things, but just to double check, you know, just, you know, Hail Mary, full of grace, whatever it takes, get me there. And so we get up in the air, and here we go, and he swings that door open, and there's that step, and he goes, all right, go. And I just, my leg was shaking, and I took that step, and out we went, and just dead silence was out there. And down we rode. We dropped 5,000 feet in 30 seconds, and he pulled the chute. And it was a blast. It was awesome. And I almost threw up. But it was a very, very exciting thing. But here's the thing. The best things in life are a little scary. The best things in life take some risk. The best things in life require us to do things that are uncomfortable. And here's the thing. God works the same way. God calls people without giving them all the answers. God calls people without giving them the roadmap. And he requires that. He takes us through unsafe journeys sometimes because it requires faith. Because he wants to see us not lean on our own strength, but he wants us to rely on him. And so many times, fear keeps us from experiencing great things with God. Don't let fear keep you from great opportunities with God. When we planted this church, when we started this church, I was scared to death. I didn't feel ready. I didn't feel equipped. I didn't feel like I would know what I was doing. But I'm telling you, this has been the best thing in my life. The best thing in my life. I'm so glad I didn't miss out on it. And I'm so glad I didn't turn down this opportunity because it's been so scary and it's been a wild ride and it's been a roller coaster, but it's been the best thing I have ever experienced. Don't miss out on those opportunities because you're scared. You got to lean on him. You got to take the unsafe roads. And the second thing is this. Second statement I want to make is that as long as you have a guarantee, you don't have faith. As long as you have a guarantee, you don't have faith. We have bought so many things for this building, and there have been so many people trying to sell me on guarantees, you know, on protection plans. And this guy the other day, I was buying some electronics, and he's like, you got to have this protection plan. I mean, you're going to be scared to death that this thing's going to break, and I'm the one who can come fix it, and it'll all be okay. And I'm like, okay, all right. But, you know, we love that, and they know we're tempted for that, that we want guarantees in life, right, that we want protection plans. But here's the thing. A life of faith, there are no guarantees. There are no guarantees. Hebrews 11:1, it says this. It's the very definition of faith. Faith is the confidence that what we hope for will actually happen, but it gives us assurance about things we cannot see. Faith, just by definition, is I hope this will happen, but what it actually is, where the assurance comes in, is that I know God's got me regardless. Is that even if what I hope for doesn't happen, it's just because God's got something bigger planned. Do you know how many other buildings and properties we had fall through before we got to this one? Do you know how many other times we thought we were buying land and we thought we were going to build something else, and then God gave us this? But guess what? At every brick wall, we didn't get discouraged. We didn't bow our heads and go boo-boo. We believe that it's just because God had something better planned for us, and I know he did. God had something better planned for us, and that's what faith requires. There are no guarantees in a life of faith. And here's the thing. We so many times try to get wrapped up in having control. I want to know that it's going to be okay. I want to determine the situation. I want to have control, but you can't have faith and have control. The two don't mix. They're yin and yang. I remember before I married my wife, Kate, before I even asked her out on a date, I had known Kate for 3 years. And Darren and I were in this competition of who was going to date her first. Long story. But anyway, why did I go there? That's not in my sermon notes. But before I asked Kate to date me, to go out on a date with me, I asked all of her friends if she liked me, okay? I needed to get a report, you know? I'm analytical, right? I needed a report. How many yeses, how many noes, you know, show me the graphs. And so I asked all of our friends, you know, strategic questions. I did case studies with each of them, and I came up with no answers. And so what I did was I tricked her into going out with me is what I did. And I told her we were going on a movie. It was a group thing, just a big group of friends going to see a movie. And it turned out when she got in the car, Darren and Shayna were in the back. And I was like,
whoops, sorry, other friends didn't show up. And then we went to the movies, and I could tell she looked a little weird. And then we went to the window, and the guy said 11:50, and I made, you know, name it, claim it. I said, I got it, because if you pay, it's a date all of a sudden. That's what stamps it right there. And so then her eyes lit up. She was like, oh, no, I've been trapped. And so don't ask how I got her to marry me. I really trapped her then, right? But we're happily married. We have two kids. It's all fine. But anyway, you know, we try to do that. We try to control it, right? We try to control the scenario. We want to know what's going to be okay. But here's the thing. You got to give up control. You have to give up control. Faith is knowing that God has you. Faith is knowing that even if you don't get what you hope for, God has got you, and God is going to come through. In life, there are no guarantees, and you've got to live that way as a Christian, knowing that nothing is guaranteed to you, that God is not your magical genie who's going to come through for you and give you exactly what you want all the time, but know that he's always got you. I believe that us in a church plant, we understand that. We understand there are no guarantees. We rented Bonfils for 5 years. There was no guarantee what we were going to find when we walked in that place. There were times where we walked in and it was set up for Georgia the Jungle. There was literal weeds stapled to the stage where Pastor Josh and I were sneezing. There would be a 15-foot rope that I'd come swinging in, you know what I mean, just to try to tie it all in. But we never knew what we were going to find. You know what? We've got to stay like that. We've got to stay living risky lives, bet the farm, big thinking, faith-fueled, because there are no guarantees. The third statement I want to make is this. To step toward your destiny, you have to step away from your security. Hebrews 11:8. It was by faith that Abraham obeyed when God called him to leave home and to go to another land that God would give him as an inheritance. He went without knowing where he was going. Well, we did a series at Christmas. We talked about how the Christmas story really starts with Abraham and the promises that God made to Abraham. I mean, you look at the family tree, the genealogy of Jesus, it begins all the way back with Abraham. Everyone's descendants of Abraham. But think about if Abraham hadn't taken that path. Abraham was scared to death, I'm sure. Abraham, there was nothing for sure. There was no control. It was an unsafe route. He had no clue where he was going. And think about if he had waited and said, well, hold on, I need to know it's going to be okay. I need to know before I go on this trip that, you know, I'm going to be taken care of, that my family's going to be taken care of, that this is going to be a smooth ride. But he didn't. He went out in faith, and he left that safety behind. He stepped away from security, but when he stepped away from security, he found his destiny. He found what God made him for. You guys met my dad up here while he was praying. He was a pastor of Bridgeton First Church. In Bridgeton. Nazarene denomination is the denomination we belong to. And he was the pastor of that church, and God gave him a vision to plant a church out in St. Charles. And there was another church in Overland that needed to merge and didn't have a place to go, and so Dad had this idea to merge these churches and to take a small group of people out to St. Charles and to plant a church. And I don't know if you know this, you know, back in the good days, the way you started a church is you got land, a building, a pastor, and the pastor got a house. It was called a parsonage. I think we need to reinstate that and bring that back, just my opinion. But, you know, very comfortable, you know, very good, you know, very cookie cutter. And this was going to be totally different. Nobody was making him do this. Nobody was telling him to do this except for God. And here we were. I remember I was in fifth grade. We had this cool parsonage. We had just moved not a year and a half, 2 years ago. And, you know, things were good. Things were secure. We had friends. We had family. The church was doing really well. And then I remember we were sitting in the car, and he told me about this idea about wanting to plant a church. And I'll be honest with you. I turned to him. I said, that sounds stupid. I really don't like that. I don't like that idea. I don't think that's going to work. That sounds very dangerous. Where's your office going to be? Well, I'm not going to have an office. Okay, well, that's not cool. Where are we going to live? I don't know. We're going to have to buy our first house. Well, I don't like that either. I mean, what in the world? You know, who's going to be the youth group? You're going to be the youth group. Grow it. Have fun. No. I don't like any of this, right? And I did. I remember telling him that it was a bad idea. And a lot of other people, he had a lot of things running up against them. But you know what? They did it. They planted New Life Church in O'Fallon 17 years ago. And it was at that church that I got my call to ministry. And that call sent me to Mid-American Nazarene University. And it was at that school where I met my wife.
And from that school, I went to Nebraska to be a pastor out in Nebraska. And then it was a small group of people who are still in this room that were going to New Life who had always wanted a church out in Troy. And 6 years ago, they called me, took a risk on me to come out and plant this church. All of this is because he had the faith to step out and to do this. And he did it once, and then nobody told him he needed to do it twice. Nobody told him he needed to do it a second time, but he had faith, and he believed, and he stepped out, and he took the risk to do it. And it was through him finding his destiny that I found mine. And many of you have found your faith and received Christ. It's because of one person taking that step, taking that risk, leaving that security. And I thank you for that. Think about what God wants to do in your life. Think about the destiny he already has planned for you, the difference he wants to make through you, the people he wants to reach for you, the ways he wants to change the world and our community and this neighborhood through you. He's had a plan for a long time. Here's the question. Are you faith-filled enough? Are you big-thinking enough? Are you the bet the farm risk-taker to answer the call? How is this going to play out in your life? I don't know, but I think it's going to play out individually and then it's going to play out corporately. I think there's somebody that God wants you to share your faith story with. I think that there's many of you who have faith-filled stories that are worth sharing, that God wants you to share with somebody else. There's somebody he wants you to invite to this church. He's someone he wants you to reach. He's someone he wants you to bring to something. And there's somebody, a boss, a neighbor, a coworker, a friend of your kids, who he wants you to reach and that you will be responsible for through your faith. I think that God is calling you to give financially, to tithe maybe for the first time, and to, for the first time in your life in your finances, depend on him and lean on him and see that 90% of your income with him is better than 100% without him. I think that God is calling you to build something bigger yourself and do things that you don't even know you can do yet. I think he's calling you to minister here. He's calling you to lead adults. He's calling you to minister to kids. He's calling you to minister to teens. And he's calling you to open doors that nobody else has been willing to open. But he's literally in front of you holding the crack in the door. He's just waiting for you to kick it in and know that he's got this. He is waiting for you. The question is where is your faith? And do you want it? Because he has a destiny for you. He has a plan for you. And he has had a plan for this church. And I'm telling you, because I've lived it out the last 5 years, it is worth it. It is all worth it. I'm going to invite Pastor Josh to come back up. And the entire band. I'm going to invite the entire band to come back up. And we're going to sing one last song. And here's the thing. I want to give you a moment to just reflect and think about this. Because here's the thing. Do not let this moment pass you by. Do not let this just slip through your hands, and don't let this just be another good message. I believe God has you here for a reason. I believe God made you get through this snow and this ice for a reason, because he wants you to be faith-filled. He wants you to leave here today believing and leaning on him like you never have before. Think about what God could do through every single one of us. Think what God could do through our church if every single one of us had a faith that was filled and big thinking and bet the farm risk-taking. Think about what could change in our community. There's an oversaturation of churches in this community. There's plenty of churches, but here's the thing. I don't know if all of them are filled with people who are ready to do what needs to be done. We got to take some risk. We got to be big thinking. We've got to go after it and do things that feel unsafe and do what it takes to reach people for Christ. Our world needs it. Our school district needs it. Our government needs it. Our community needs it. They need you, and God has a plan for you. So this morning, as we pray and as we talk to God, we're also going to close in worship. And you know what? We got these awesome altars down here that were made by Wes. And you know what? When we were talking about it, I told the team, I told the leadership, I told several people here, you know, we're a pretty contemporary church, but I'll never get away from this, because I think the most impactful, most powerful things happen when we're on bended knee with our heads bowed to God. And I think that this morning, some of us this morning need to come to God and say, God, fill me up. Fill me up with your faith. Fill me up with your love. Speak to me this morning. Reach out to me. Maybe some of us even this morning need to be forgiven. Maybe what's been between you and God, why you even haven't had faith, is because you've had sin in your life, because you've lived a selfish life, and you've done things your own way. And this morning, you need to lay that down. You need to die to that old life, and you need to say, you know what? I do. I want to reach that destiny. I want to see what that plan is. I've done things my own way, and it hasn't gotten me that far. And so I want all of him this morning. God's here. God's right in front of you. Don't let your lack of faith stiff arm him and keep him from performing the miracles in your life that he has planned, that he has ready to hand you. Let's pray this morning. God, as we come to you, as we call on your name, God, we invite your spirit into our hearts. God, this morning, we invite you to come and to speak to us right now. God, you know our hearts, you know our minds, you know exactly where we are. And God, this morning we get very real and we get very honest with you. And God, we just ask you to examine us. Is there any part of our life, any sin, any selfishness, anything that's keeping us from being able to follow you and be able to grasp that destiny that you have planned for us? God, is there any part of us that is full of fear and anxiety, that keeps us from going the safe route, from keeps us holding on to our security, that keeps us wanting to have control over the situation? God, this morning, will you help us to let go? Will you help us this morning to reach out to you and rely on you? Will you help us to take the step of faith out and to jump out? Because God, this morning, more than ever, we believe that you have something great planned for us. We believe that you want to perform a miracle for us. And so God, help us this morning to receive it, to see it, and then be able to work it out in our life starting right now. God, we love you this morning. We pray these things in your name. Amen. I want to invite you to stand this morning, and we're going to sing. The altars are open. Make this time be a God where God speaks to you, where God makes everything so crystal clear, so apparent. Don't leave this room missing what he has for you.